God, we're getting good at this.
Let's get started. And welcome to a special Halloween edition of the Power Hour. I'm your host, Mitch Pump, my co-host, Damned Ford.
Spooky Damned Ford.
Can you say spooky still? Were we supposed to say like spoofy because spooky's racist now or something, right?
I don't know.
It's better what they used to call Halloween. I can't really say it, but it was use the N-word, so.
Jesus! This is gonna be this kind of show, huh? We're getting heavy.
Yeah. Coughlin's. No. Really. Well, I'm in blackface, right? I'm in my Halloween costume, Dan. I'm dressed as Colin Kaepernick. I'm in blackface. I have an afro on.
Well, I don't mention this a lot, but every single Tuesday I dress up as Al Jolson. It's just like Al Jolson Day. Because I'm a big respecter of the Jewish people.
Thank you. I'm in a Colin Kaepernick outfit. I'm in a, it says we'll stand for food, or we'll stand for food stamps. That's
sure.
That's about races, yeah.
Have you seen that? Work in EBT.
How excited are you to wake up tomorrow? We're recording this on Halloween night. Dan, how excited are you to wake up tomorrow and see all the racist Colin Kaepernick costumes and the various frats around America?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's all going to be like the fucking shoe polish on their faces.
Yeah.
Like, they're all, I mean, I mentioned Al Jolson. They're all going to look like Al Jolson.
It's going to be, Dan, I'm really going to enjoy the defense of it, where they post, like, a picture of white chicks, and they're like, see, it's not racist then. And it's like, what, white chicks, like, it's not like it's something that's, like, culturally celebrated by black people.
Like, yeah, the shitty movie that came out, like, 10 years ago. That literally the only people who seem to remember it happened are racist people who trot it out as like a
justification. We're still mad about it.
They get to do it if we don't.
Like how can you in 2018? Why would you want to put all that makeup on your face? Like, Dan, this is my biggest issue with Halloween and dressing up. I don't mind if other people do it. I think it's cool. I like seeing the costumes. But like, what happens if you die and you're like in a clown makeup outfit? You look like an idiot. The coroner's going to make fun of you.
Yeah, that is my big fear one day, is that I'll be on the slab dressed as Tim Curry from Rocky Horror,
no,
and then everyone's going to make fun of me.
Well, Dan, imagine this. You're in blackface. You have a heart attack. You get to the hospital. Your doctor's a black guy.
That's called being a dead man.
Yeah.
You better hope you're not an organ donor.
That's not fair, Dan. That black guy would do a great job, and you're going to feel like an idiot for being a racist. Imagine if Dr. Ben Carson. That was my Ben Carson.
Okay. Yeah, I'm glad you aborted that. That was something that should have been aborted.
I'm Ben Carson. I can't do
it. It's basically Michael Jackson is what you're doing right now.
There was a hilarious Ben Carson. I can't remember who did it, but like I was like always pissing my pants laughing. Just because it just made fun of how dumb Ben Carson is. Like, oh, he's a brain surgeon. That doesn't mean you're smart. It just means you're good at one thing. Sorry.
It does mean you're kind of smart.
No, it means you're... No, that's stupid. He's good at brain surgery.
There is that thing that a lot of particularly intelligent people can sometimes fall into, where because you're an expert at a field, you start thinking you're an expert at every field.
Yeah.
Instead of like...
Well, it's like
when stay in your lane.
It's like when people like praise Silicon Valley people, like they're so smart, and like they just like invent $2,000 juicers and like... We're like, what if we did a ride share that makes scheduled stops and it was like in a big vehicle?
It's like a bus. Yeah, it's a bus. Yeah.
You
came up with a way to add microtransactions to, I don't know, calling 911. Like, hey, while you're waiting for the operator, you can pay 99 cents and, you know.
Jump ahead. That's the future, Dan. That's what we're.
Basically, the future is a fucking Spider Jerusalem comic.
Well, it is. Dan, you know, the 911, it is kind of true, though. If you live in a wealthier neighborhood, they'll definitely come to your house faster than if you didn't. So it's kind of, and there's our political part.
Sure.
Let's jump in. It's Halloween night, Dan. I want to talk some spooky stories. I want to talk the most spooky story in the history of college football, and that's the fifth down.
Ooh. Spooky.
Take us back in time. Let's jump in your time train. Let's go back. Let's go back to the 90s.
Our time train, huh?
Time train. Let's jump in there and set the scene for the fifth down.
So, Colorado was pretty clearly the best team in the country that season. It was sort of a weird year. Pac-8 was pretty weak, or the Pac-12. They were the Pac-12 at that point. Pac-12 was pretty weak. The SEC wasn't very good either. This is before Spurrier shows up. The Big Ten was pretty good, but Colorado was clearly the best team.
Yeah, Oklahoma, and this is about the time Miami started to kind of fall off. Yeah, we're at the tail end of the Nebraska Empire.
No. This is before the Nebraska. This is before Nebraska takes off.
Okay.
This is before Nebraska really takes off and has their big run.
Okay.
Nebraska's good, not great.
Okay, we're at the penis beginning of the Nebraska Empire.
Right. Oklahoma has been ruling the roost in the Big Eight. To set the scene here, Oklahoma has been whipping everybody's ass.
And everyone's got a jersey that goes down to their belly.
Yes. But Barry Switzer gets fired because multiple players on his team get arrested for sexual assault and various other crimes. And the belief starts to get among everybody that Barry Switzer is not even trying to control his team.
No, then he jumps to Dallas a little bit later.
No, he just gets fired and then hangs around with nothing to do, and then Jerry Jones hires him because he's one of the three people Jerry Jones knew.
Yes.
He was Jerry Jones' position coach in college at Arkansas. Literally, that's how they knew each other. So there's this big void in the Big Eight suddenly, because Oklahoma has ruled the roost for a long time, and now they're suddenly their program has collapsed without Barry Switzer. Colorado has never been any good at football, but they hire this guy. They hire this guy from Michigan who's basically importing the Bo Schembechler, big physical toughness. It's Bill McCartney, and he brings this physical style of offense using the option and a very, very good defense. He was defensive coordinator for Michigan before he comes to Colorado. And it takes him a while. He starts building the team in the early 80s. But by the time you get to the late 80s and the early 90s, he's gotten Colorado where he wants it to be. And it happens to coincide with Oklahoma collapsing. Yeah. So suddenly you've got this ascendant Colorado program. And in a lot of ways is this sleeping giant of a program, because the Pac-10 isn't very good. USC's down. UCLA's pretty good, but not amazing. You know, this is before Oregon became a great program. Oregon State is a seller.
It's before even really Nike became what they were that helped turn
sure.
it into.
Nike's yeah.
still in it's just getting big. It's turning into a giant. Yeah.
Washington State has a really good offense, but not really anything else. And no players. Arizona State isn't really much to talk about. Arizona is about to have a good year in about 2 or 3 years, but at this point isn't any good. So there's a lot of players in L.A. and in Southern California who don't have many programs locally to go to that are doing all that well. And what Bill McCartney starts doing is just raiding California and just taking, like, I mean, he would just go to L.A. and just go, hey, come to Colorado, come to Colorado. We're not that far away. Come to Colorado. And builds
Colorado
a team.
Is an easy sell. I mean, it's not the worst place in the world to go to. It's a pretty cool little school.
And the blueprint that McCartney builds at Colorado is what ultimately ends with Colorado joining the Pac-12. Yeah. Because he had such a big impact on the way Colorado people thought about their program that they went, hey, why are we even in the Big 12, Big 8? Like, let's go play in California every year. Yeah. That's where all of our players are.
Yeah.
So he's built this team. They're clearly the best team in the country. I mean, everybody is looking at them going.
And this is before they got Cordell Stewart, correct?
Yes, this is before that. But they've got a very good option offense. They're kind of famous for, like, always waiting to the last minute to pitch. Like, they had these crazy option plays where the quarterback would, like, run 15 yards downfield and then finally pitch.
Like you would do an NCAA.
Yes, they were an NCAA offense with a really good defense. They end up tying for the national championship.
You tie with Georgia Tech.
With Georgia Tech, which is the freakiest, flukiest season in the history of college football. That's for another day, though. They're playing Missouri. Now, Missouri is not a great program. Missouri has really not been an excellent football team since the 40s.
But Missouri doesn't like Colorado, Dan.
They're conference enemies. They don't get along. Missouri doesn't tend to get along with anybody in the Big Eight. Yeah. Which is why they're no longer in the Big 12.
Get along with anybody. Well, really,
there's a reason they're in the SEC. There's a reason they've joined the SEC, because they didn't get along with anybody in their own conference.
No, and just no one likes them in the SEC. That's no one cares about them. Might be
yes. Better word to put it, yeah. And Missouri is right there, about to swing the upset and beat Colorado.
Yeah. Now, Dan, then, how close were they? Colorado. Let's jump to the game though. Colorado jumps down there. What, first and goal? If you look at the video, Dan, you can see fans on the sideline ready to rush. This is how intense this game was. It was a big deal. You know. I think the running back takes it. They get stopped at the one. It's another play that gets stopped. Colorado calls a timeout. At this point, a man in the stands has a heart attack, Dan. The refs, the line guy is not even looking at the ref. The ref never even signals to change the marker to third down. So for whatever reason, the marker still says second down. Colorado runs another play. I think they get tackled. They're out of timeouts. They spike the ball. It's fourth down. Game should be over. But the marker was never set. So they get an extra fifth down. That's the spooky part, if you will, Dan. They get this mysterious fifth down. They go on to score barely. They get the ball across the line on their fifth down play. They win. And Missouri fans even still start rushing the field because they thought they had won. So it wasn't even the fifth down. It looked like he was kind of short before he scored. And then, like, you can see where the fans realize what just happened, and they're, like, very sad. Damn.
Yeah, and what this game is kind of remembered for is that, one, Bill McCartney was a Missouri alum, which made it kind of worse that he did this to his former school. But after the game, most of the press were like the big question the press had after the game was, well, shouldn't you forfeit? Like, wouldn't that be the honorable thing to do? Because we all know you got an
extra
down.
But to be fair, Colorado didn't know they had it. Like, they may have, but I think in the confusion, they didn't even know what had happened. Because obviously,
sure,
they spiked the ball.
They wouldn't have spiked the ball if the thing didn't say third. Like, they wouldn't have done that.
So the error to me is wholly on the refs, but also, like I said, a man has a heart attack in the stands. So the line judge isn't even paying it. That's how chaotic this moment was, Dan, and that's how you get the weirdest play in college football history, probably. One of the weirdest things ever happened. One of the spookiest.
Yeah, but the other thing, Bill McCartney made it worse, because when they asked him whether they should forfeit, he's like, well, I thought about it, but their turf is really lousy. So so he basically said, yeah, the field is lousy, therefore we deserve it, even though we shouldn't have won. Which I've always thought was the biggest dick move.
Now, that is, you know, Dan, we did a little bit of research for this, and that was probably the only really spooky story we could kind of find in the world of college.
We put our minds together. We are way too drunk to come up with spooky stories.
I'm not even drunk, Dan. I'm just high on life. I'm high on this World Series right now. But, Dan, I mean, there wasn't even, like, a story of, like, a headless ghost that, like, played football at Yale in the 1800s. Isn't that weird, though, that college football doesn't have a lot of weird ghost stories that you think maybe would have popped up? Especially in the Ivy League, where, like, those blue-blood Yankees tend to believe in ghosts a lot.
Yeah, because they're all, like, they're all inbred, and, you know, their brains don't work right. Their eyes are too close together.
I love that that's always the go-to insult, because, like, apparently every American was just, like, really into incest. And I think after Game of Thrones this year and the reaction to what happened, I think America still loves incest. It's not just north or south, Dan.
Hey, look, just go on certain websites and you'll see how popular it is.
Ted Cruz loves incest. You know, it's
sure a sexual with an extra L post.
Speaking of incest, Dan, let's jump to Florida. Didn't have the best week last week. We had Jim McElwain,
or maybe the best week. Maybe this was secretly the greatest week ever.
We had Jim McElwain fake getting death threats, it would appear. And then you had a week where Florida talked a lot of shit about Georgia. I think these seniors have never lost to Georgia. And they get, what was the final score, Dan? Like, 50-something to 7?
It was, I believe, 42-7.
42-7. And then I think shortly after that, you heard the rumors that Florida was looking to fund a way out of the buyout with McElwain. And then I think, was it Monday or Sunday?
Yeah, that was happening at halftime. Yeah. At halftime of the Florida-Georgia game, there was stuff breaking that Florida's lawyers were meeting with each other to determine if they could void the buyout.
Which did they get to, Dan? I don't.
They ultimately, they made a settlement with McElwain where they're going to pay him $4 million of his $12 million he was owed. But $3 million of that has to go to Colorado State, because that's what he still owes Colorado State for leaving them early to go to Florida.
No, Dan, I mean, Jim McElwain, if you look at the, you know, you look at the sheet, I mean, back-to-back, you know, division titles, yeah, he didn't win anything.
Meaningless, but by the way.
But he's only been there 2 years.
Two
and a half. But why was it that he would be fired so quick? Was it an attitude issue with McElwain? Was it discipline? Because it seemed like every year now Florida has a discipline problem with their program. I think this year is the credit card fraud scandal.
Like 15 players are arrested for credit card fraud.
But is it a combo of everything? Because I hear like one of the bigger issues was the way McElwain treated his former staff at Colorado State. He tends to rub people the wrong way. So, maybe not the most people person guy.
So here's it's a multi-fronted thing. Here's his biggest problem he had coming in. Is that when he was hired, people scratched their heads going, wait, what? You're hiring who? I think fundamentally that's his biggest problem. The only guy who believed in Jim McElwain that he was ready for the Florida job was Jeremy Foley. Now, Jeremy Foley, who's the longtime athletic director of Florida, was the guy who oversaw Florida becoming this powerhouse athletic department. He became their athletic director, I believe, in 93. He's the guy who hired Billy Donovan. He's the guy who upgraded all their money. You know, he's the guy who oversaw Florida becoming one of the wealthiest programs in college football.
Yeah.
And basically, if Jeremy Foley wants to do something, nobody in Florida was going to say no to him. But Jeremy Foley hired Jim McElwain and then almost immediately retired. Now, Jeremy Foley still works in the department as an emeritus position, and he still has an office in the athletic department. So it's not like he's totally gone, but he is not.
He doesn't have as much
influence. He's not the day-to-day athletic director. The athletic director is Scott Strickland. So fundamentally, the first problem Jim McElwain has, the guy who hired him did not stick around, and the guy who came in is not the guy who hired him, and very few people thought he was the guy that Florida should have hired.
No.
When Florida was targeting him, people were like, you're going to pay how much money to get this guy? Because they had to pay this huge buyout from Colorado State just to get him. And everybody's like, what? You're doing that to get who?
Yeah, especially after you let go Muschamp, who, you know, didn't have the best run in Florida, but I think time has proven that Muschamp's definitely a better coach than McElwain.
If Muschamp was given the amount of money and the ability to hire the assistants that McElwain was, I don't think he would have. I think
He would have had a much better offensive.
Muschamp was never given the money to hire the offensive coordinator that he wanted to hire.
I thought Muschamp, I think he's, I know he didn't succeed in Florida, but I think we tend to underrate
people,
how good Coach Boom is.
People like him, though. Yeah. That's the biggest difference between why he got 4 years and McElwain got 3. People wanted Muschamp to succeed because he's a good guy, whereas McElwain's a dick. So that comes to point 2. McElwain's a dick.
Yeah, what happened with the staff at Colorado State, Dan? Let's talk about that.
See, I haven't heard that story. You have to tell me about that.
It was just me. I heard like he burnt. Did he not? Maybe he didn't bring a lot of people over, like coaches or.
Oh, he didn't. Yeah, he didn't bring many people. Yeah.
Which is kind of a note. It's more like a manners thing, I think, with college football. But you tend to, these people got you there. You take them up to the big time, and his staff had a lot to do with why Colorado State was decently successful.
Yeah,
There's a pretty decent little coaching staff there. I mean, look at Mike Bobo's had success there.
Yeah, McElwain. One of the points where his relationship with Florida turned was after last year's bowl game, where Scott Strickland had literally just come on the job, and the first thing Scott Strickland did was negotiate a contract extension for McElwain that got him more money. And you know, they had already, it hadn't been publicized yet, but they had already agreed, and they were, you know, the T's were being crossed and the I's were being dotted, but they had already agreed in principle to this extension. Florida wins their bowl game. You know, the press are lobbing softballs at him, like, how does it feel to win a bowl game? Oh, momentum for next year, yada, yada, yada. And as would come into play when McElwain talked his way out of $11 million, McElwain couldn't help himself but say something dickish. He closed his remarks talking about this great bowl win for Florida, saying, and let's see if Florida's athletic department is willing to step up and do their jobs. And everybody in the athletic department from that point on turned on McElwain, because they had literally just hired a new AD whose first act was giving McElwain more money, and McElwain smarted off to him in public.
And it's not like McElwain had a super impressive win to him, you know.
They beat Iowa.
Yeah.
Woo.
In the Outback Bowl.
Woo.
Maybe I think I just associate Iowa with the Outback Bowl.
So you've got a guy who's like going out of his way to just be a dick for no reason.
No, and Dan, who thinks that's the type of success that gets you praise at Florida, which Florida should be in the Outback Bowl every year with the amount of talent, the prestige of that program.
Well,
that should be a bad year.
That brings us to the biggest problem for McElwain. Yeah. He's a terrible recruiter. He was doing an awful job of recruiting. Florida's recruiting classes were well below what Florida should be getting with all that talent. And he's falling way behind Florida State.
We've seen it at Auburn, Florida State, Miami. As soon as Muschamp got hired at Auburn, a lot of those recruits jumped over to Muschamp's side, which kind of tells you why it's kind of important to be a nice guy sometimes.
And part of the biggest problem that McElwain had is that he didn't understand. McElwain, on a fundamental level, his biggest screw-up was not realizing that all blue chip program jobs are the same. His background was he's coached his whole career on the West Coast, and his only really major conference job was Alabama as Nick Saban's offensive coordinator. He came into Florida assuming that it's basically just Alabama, you know, with a different pair of uniforms. But Florida is a very different ecosystem, and Florida high schools are very different. And to be successful at a Florida college, you have to have guys on staff who know Florida as a state backwards and forwards and have ties to the Florida high schools to get you those players.
Well, Dan, this is
that's
a state
not what
McElwain
did.
Yeah, Dan, this is a state where players, where coaches forged players' names to send in their letter of intent before. This is a wild – Florida's a different scene, obviously, than Alabama or even they're out west. It's a wild, especially for high school sports.
You've got to have a background coaching in that state, and they didn't have those guys. And Florida's recruiting was terrible, and that's why, you know, this year they had to replace their defensive coordinator. They talked him into hiring Randy Shannon because they're like, you've got to have a Florida guy on staff who knows the state of Florida because none of your guys know what they're doing. All of your guys are just getting outworked on the recruiting trail.
No, and Dan, and part of being a successful college football coach is having assistants and other guys who have pipelines to these certain high schools that just tend to produce great talent.
Right.
That's just how it works in high school athletics. Some schools just get it and some don't. Don't know why. Maybe something in the water. Who knows? But yeah.
And so dovetailing into that, the reason why they hired McElwain was they thought he was going to come fix the offense. The offense never got any better. In fact, the offense got worse.
Got worse.
And that leads me into a thing I've been thinking about recently, which is, you know, about 10, 15 years ago, there was a lot of defensive coordinators who had great runs in college football who all got retired because they just couldn't defend this new crop of spread offense. They just, you know, we saw it happening in the Big 12 first because Mike Leach went to Texas, you know, first Oklahoma's offensive coordinator, then Texas Tech's head coach, and just torched people. You know, just set defenses on fire. And so then Kansas hired a spread coach and Missouri hired a spread coach. You know, and you just saw all the – and then eventually Texas got a spread offense.
No, it was funny that we talked about it because, you know, think about the success Florida had when they jumped to the spread with Urban Meyer.
Yeah, I mean, look at Tommy Tuberville. Tommy Tuberville was one of the most respected defensive minds in the country. Auburn had a top 10, top 20 defense every year under him. Until the spread offenses came to the SEC, and then all of a sudden, you know, Tommy Tuberville couldn't defend them. It's just his style of defense and what he believed in and what he had learned how to coach just could not handle these new offenses. And we just saw a ton of guys like that.
No, well, Dan, what was the story Cheese told, I believe, on the SEC preview show about Kevin Steele at LSU just like, his brain exploded when he ran into a spread offense, I think, at one point, where he just started calling plays that weren't even in the playbook.
Oh, that's the famous story of when Kevin Steele was the defensive coordinator during the Clemson-West Virginia game. The bowl game where, you know, they played in the Orange Bowl, and West Virginia ran that play, which you still see sometimes, where the quarterback catches the snap and then flips it forward to a jet sweep receiver so that it's
Kind of a shovel sweep.
Yeah, and Clemson had never seen that play before, and West Virginia averaged like 30 yards a pop on that play, just that one play, because their minds melted. And Kevin Steele just starts freaking out and calling plays that aren't even in the playbook.
Almost got dementia or something, Dan.
He went into like a fugue state and just started calling stuff from when he was in the NFL and just forgot what game he was in. I mean, it was nuts.
Yeah.
You know, we just saw a lot of defensive coordinators just really get run out of the sport because they could not handle the direction that things had changed on them. And so I bring that up to talk about Florida and McElwain and what we're seeing. And we're seeing this in Florida State with Jimbo, too. We may have hit a point where a lot of these pro-style offenses, just the talent is so used to coming out of high school running spread offenses.
No, most high schools now, Dan, I think now run spread because it's an easier offense to run because you don't always have a bunch of great defensive linemen. You know, maybe you run a zone spread or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's the big reason why high schools all started running zone a long time ago, which is you don't have to worry about getting a guard. You just get a fat guy that needs.
Yeah, you can get a kid who's 185 pounds and play guard and be perfect.
You know, so you do, like 10, 15 years ago, the default offense that people ran in high school was line up in a single back formation or an I formation and just run ISO.
Yeah.
So you had a ton of offensive linemen who were used to playing physical, dumb football. And so you could take those guys, teach them how to pass block, and then have a physical run game to go with all your fancy passing, your fancy pro-style passing. And as long as you could teach a quarterback, as long as you were a good quarterback coach and could teach the quarterback how to run the offense, you were good because you had offensive linemen coming out the ass.
Why the NFL tends to be less evolved, Dan, because you just have the best offensive linemen in the world in your league, obviously.
And what's happened is that because you've had so many more spread offenses, you don't have the linemen who are used to getting down in a three-point stance and knocking the guy out who's across the line from him.
Yeah.
Because they just don't play that way anymore. It's all zone. And they're not used to just like man on a man, hit a guy, bang. That's not how they play. And they're not used to pass protecting for a quarterback under center. Quarterbacks are not used to turning their back to the defense. They're used to being in a shotgun snap and being able to see the whole field.
Yeah.
And you are – so when you want to run a pro-style offense, you're kind of running uphill and you can't really make it work unless you go out and do what Georgia did and hire one of the best offensive line coaches in the whole country. You know, they poached him from Arkansas. He was Bielema's offensive line coach.
Yeah.
To make that stuff work for them. And they had a bad year last year.
Yeah, that's still a 5-star program, too, that can pull that off. But
Florida could do that, too. But the only way to make that offense work at this point is to go hire an otherworldly offensive line coach.
Well, Dan, and here was the other issue with Florida. I want to jump into this real quick. You talk about the changes in offense. The most successful offense for Florida in the past 10 or 20 years was the spread with Urban Meyer. Coaches see that. They're going to switch their offense to something a little bit more similar to that.
Yes, they want their guys to go.
In Georgia's always been pro. If you watch Georgia high school, you're going to see spread, but you're going to see a little bit more pro than you may see in Florida or other places.
And you got a lot of schools running flex bone stuff because you got so many small colleges in Georgia that run the flex bone.
No, and you got a lot of smaller schools that just options work for 50 years. God damn it, we're going to keep running it because the veer is hard for a 16-year-old to defend. I don't care who you are.
And by God, this kid will get to go play for Georgia Southern or Kennesaw State or Mercer or
or Tech if he can learn. But we've even seen, where Auburn runs a little bit of that.
Sure. Now.
So yeah, it's things have changed kind of even in Southern football now. Like you go to Texas now, Dan, it's mostly spread everywhere because of the way Texas changed. So if you're McElwain, you go into Florida, why wouldn't you run the spread? Because you see the talent around you. Is it that just McElwain just doesn't understand where you went to go coach?
I think McElwain was a dinosaur offensively, 10 years ago when Nick Saban kind of moved on and said, hey, go get a head coaching job because I don't know if you're going to have a spot here much longer. Yeah. You know, I mean, and he did the same thing to Nussmeier. Like, Nussmeier, and both of them were united together at, you know, at Florida, you know, McElwain brought Nussmeier in to be his offensive coordinator. So you got two guys that Nick Saban kind of did the soft fire, where he said, "Hey, you need to go get another job because I'm going to replace you." You know, Nick Saban. Look at what Nick Saban loves: downhill, physical, run between the tackles, football. And even Nick Saban went, "Oh, if I'm going to do this, I got to get a running quarterback who can add that zone read, that ability to threaten a defense with his legs, so I can open up my inside zone."
Well, because, Dan, and you know, people forget that though. Like, you can run a spread and still run power football. Like, that was the beauty with Saban, was he just mixed in what he knew worked with this new age offense kind of thing. Yeah. You can still keep your old concepts and principles you had 10 years ago, but you got to kind of change the setting around them, if that makes sense.
I think if you want to be a great physical, I think if you want to be a great downhill running team that runs the ball, you have to have a quarterback who can run it, or you've got to have an ungodly good offensive line. You've got to be Wisconsin or Stanford, and Michigan's starting to get there, but that's what you've got to do to be able to do that. You cannot just be, "Hey, we're just going to be we're just a pro style offense and we're going to run between the tackles." If you try to do that and you're not ungodly good at developing linemen, you're not going to be able to do it.
No.
You know.
And but Dan, you know, you talk about, I mean, I don't mean to switch back to Alabama real quick, but we've seen Alabama kind of do their, I don't know, I'm sorry, I don't know where it's going with that.
Well, it's very, like, it reminds me so much in the older Alabama fans. I mean, I'm sure, I don't know how many of them are listening to us, because I don't know if they get, I don't know if they get podcasts in their outhouses.
No, but we're not on AOL.
But, you know, it's very similar to me to, like, Bear Bryant switching to the wishbone at the tail end of his career. You know, Bear Bryant was a pro-style coach for much of his career. You know, he had Blanton Collier at Kentucky. You know, he had Howard Schnellenberger as an assistant. You know, he had Joe Namath and Kenny Stabler at Alabama in the 60s, you know, running more of a pro-style attack. And then he had a couple of years where the team didn't win a lot of games, and so he saw the wishbone tearing it up at Texas, you know, not far from, you know, close enough that you could be familiar with what's going on. And he saw Oklahoma switch to it, and he's like, "God dang, they just scored a lot of points doing that." And he put the wishbone in over the course of one offseason without telling anybody. Alabama just showed up for week one running the wishbone. And then he won another national title, you know. Yeah. He won like two more national titles in the 70s and had a complete, you know,
kind of it's revitalization. Similar kind of like the Saban reinvention of his offense in these past couple of years.
Yeah, where they
went out hired Lane Kiffin. He starts running the pistol. Alabama.
I mean, Alabama's basically a pistol option team that runs a bunch of like really short passes, RPOs, to get the ball out on the edge, to keep you out of the box.
Athleticism. Also, it helps, like I said, Alabama also turns out the best, traditionally some of the best offensive linemen in the country every year, too.
But, like, look at what Alabama, like, Alabama can realistically recruit to any offense they want to run, and they're getting the best offensive linemen. They're getting all that. And they still made the decision, we'd be better off going with a running quarterback system than trying
to have
your quarterback line up, you know, A.J. McCarron. They used to do that. They used to have A.J. McCarron and the guy who's on ESPN now, who wasn't any good in college either. But
Greg McElroy.
They were the generic pro-style offense, and they made the decision, this is suboptimal. We could do better.
No, because what does happen, Dan, too, if you're running that offense, your recruiting classes, you can't really miss a lot. And regardless of who you are, sometimes you're just going to get some bad eggs with your recruiting class. It just happens. Yeah. You know, like even Alabama, you know, even the Alabamas of the world have had issues at times with kind of whiffing on some recruits. And if you get one bad class, it can wreck your program if you need everything to be perfect. Yes. If that makes sense.
So, you know, I think the failure of McElwain is something every team should take heed of, and it's like you really need to think twice if you want to be a quote-unquote pro-style team.
I don't even get why you would after you saw what Urban Meyer did. Why would you even not want to get a guy who just runs the same damn thing?
And you're going to hear some writers like try to defend McElwain and say, "Oh, he's still a really smart guy." Don't listen to that, because all you got to do is go to 10-yard torrents. Download some Florida games and listen to Gary Danielson just going, "There's none of this makes any sense. These wide receivers aren't even running routes." Like, You know, Florida's offense was so poorly designed and so poorly. McElwain might be a great X's and O's coach, but as a teacher, which is what the most fundamental thing about being a coach is, he was terrible. He could not teach what he wanted to do. His line couldn't block, his quarterbacks couldn't make decisions, and his wide receivers never seemed to be on the same page as their quarterback.
No, and then, and maybe the one of the bigger reasons for him getting fired too is he didn't instill discipline, which you just got to do when you're coaching a program like Florida. You know, especially when you have that Alabama pedigree. You know, where you don't hear about that kind of stuff happening at Alabama with Saban because they know better.
And the other thing about McElwain is he's the kind of guy with size 8 feet who wears a size 11 shoe just because it's just so that you don't know his feet are so small.
And maybe he's got like lifts too.
You know, if you catch what I'm laying down there. Like, Jim McElwain was an extremely insecure guy. Just the way he handled the shark thing, which should have just been, yeah, it's pretty funny. Like, let's move on. You know, I was out golfing that day with Spurrier. I don't even fish. You know, whatever. Make a joke. It's stupid. Nobody actually thought that was you.
But when you deny it, you have, like, because even
start going, you've hurt my family, I'm gonna sue you all. It's like, oh fuck, you know, look at this fucking loser.
Because like even Saban, who like is famous for his like very tight butthole, I don't even think he would react to things. I think he would just kind of roll his eyes and just point out it's just dumb. He wouldn't take it personally, if that makes sense. He would just think it's dumb as a distraction.
Yeah, and just like the way he handled that was totally wrong. And the other thing about his team was his team always thought they were, like, better than they were in a way that was almost too much. Like, that team spent so much time talking shit about their teammates and running their mouths. Like,
no, we saw it this week, you know, at Georgia.
Yeah, they were wearing
T-shirts. And you know what, Kirby Smart, you know, kind of a McElwain, we can call him a peer, I guess. You know what he did when the Georgia players started, like, wanting to respond back? He goes, how many guys in here are beating Florida? No one stood up and goes, well, there you go. Stop talking. Yeah, that's what you should do.
Go beat him.
Go beat him.
But like the other thing.
Yeah. But what he did was he held the mirror back to his players like a good leader would do, Dan.
And there's this other thing. There's other thing that made me laugh is like going into like their first game of the year was against Michigan, right?
Yeah.
Their running back talked a bunch of shit about Michigan's defense saying, oh, they're slow from side to side. We're not going to have a problem with them. And, like, maybe you think that's true. And obviously a lot of kids in the South always, like, look at, you know, northern football teams and go, oh, they're slow.
Yeah.
But when you're Florida and your offense has not done anything against anybody, like, your offense stinks, don't run your mouth about a defense that was ranked in the top 10 the year before.
Yeah. All right, Dan, I want to jump now. Who's replaced the McElwain now? Who are we looking at? I think Dan Mullen's the hot name.
Dan Mullen's the smart money just because the problem with Dan Mullen, and Dan Mullen every year interviews for like three jobs.
We've talked
about
this before on the show, Dan. Dan Mullen clearly farts in every one of his interview meetings. That's the only explanation.
Yeah,
that or like he's got a Nazi tattoo that we don't see. Something weird.
Dan Mullen never comes across good on an interview. The difference is that Florida's new athletic director is his old boss at Mississippi State, who he had a great relationship with, who's had a chance to see him in action. And Scott Strickland has given interviews in the past and said the way he evaluates coaches in football is their ability to develop quarterbacks. He feels like that's the number one skill to look for in a head coach. And obviously Dan Mullen's been able to do that. You know, he was Tim Tebow's offensive coordinator. Tim Tebow fell off without him when Dan Mullen left to go take the Mississippi State job. The Florida offense went in the toilet without him. He was able to develop Dak Prescott, their current guy, who's a very good quarterback who, you know.
Fitzgerald,
who the only other team that was recruiting him was UT Chattanooga. You know, and he's turned him into one of the top five quarterbacks in the SEC.
No, but Dan, here's why Mullen makes the most sense of Florida. Like you talked, offensive coordinator when Tebow's there, he's got those pipelines. He knows how the high school programs work. It seems like all the stars are aligning for Dan Mullen, and maybe, just maybe, this is the best thing that could have happened to him. That Florida job seems like the best fit for Dan Mullen.
And he's a guy who's proven he can survive in the SEC coaching at Starkville.
Yeah.
He's the greatest coach in the history of Mississippi State.
And how, Dan, how bad is Mississippi State going to feel when they do lose, like, a, probably their best coach in the modern era to Florida? Is that just, does that destroy anything Mississippi State's kind of built up?
I mean, if they, I mean, they'll have to do a good hire. I mean, if they go out and they hire a great coach, you know, they can keep it going. But
well, I think the advantage there for Mississippi State is also going to be that Ole Miss is going to be in trouble for
us. Yes, that is helping. But Dan Mullen's got the same problem he's always had, is that Jeremy Foley may not be the athletic director anymore, but he's still in the office, and Jeremy Foley hates him. So if Jeremy Foley can block him, Jeremy Foley will block him. We'll see. We'll see. Yeah. We'll see.
Okay, how much... let's say if it's not Dan Mullen, who else would you look at around the world of college? Because we hear Bob – I want to talk about this for a second, actually. We jump into this. We hear Bob Stoops' name. Is Bob Stoops the new John Gruden?
Yes. Every dumb program is going to think they're getting Bob Stoops. Bob Stoops. Why would Bob Stoops
leave Oklahoma to go to Florida? Like, it's just dumb.
He did coach there as a defensive coordinator before he got the Oklahoma job.
He had the best job in the world.
Dan Mullen or Bob Stoops is. I mean, he retired. Here's the best way of putting it. Bob Stoops was the head coach of the team with the best quarterback in the country, and he retired. What makes you think he's going to? If you can't be bothered to keep coaching when you've got the best quarterback in the country, you're never coaching again.
No, like, because I mean, I think coaching's one of those things too. I mean, football is where if your heart's not into it, you might as well get out. I think that was the issue with Stoops. I think he was ready to go. He did everything, and I think he just wants to live a life as a civilian. So he wants Stoops is going.
He wants to just. I mean, when you hear him talk, he spends all this time talking about his golf game and what concert he went to this week. Like
he wants to live life.
He is retired. He is never coming back.
You might see him on ESPN or something.
Never. I don't even think he wants that much responsibility. Nothing. Like I think he's gonna like wait a couple years and then do the Spurrier thing where he just comes back to Oklahoma as a booster, like a guy who helps raise money.
Yeah, you know, just like a guy who gets paid to drink and play golf. That essentially is very. So Dan, who do you think though?
The names to look at, Willie Taggart. He's only in his first year at Oregon, but he's not particularly well paid. Willie Taggart took a job at Oregon basically to get a Power Five job, he didn't get paid a lot to go to Oregon.
Do you think Oregon though? Oregon's got the money, I think, to re up and give him money.
Sure. At the very least, Willie Taggart. If you're Florida, you have to call Willie Taggart because he's a Florida native. He's from Tampa. He built South Florida into a pretty good program. He recruited extremely well. What about Scott Frost? I just don't think anybody's going to get him other than Nebraska. I mean, obviously Florida needs to call him.
Florida's a better job than Nebraska.
It is, but I mean, when you're from Nebraska and you're an alumni of Nebraska, well, that changes the calculus.
He's also spent some time now in Florida, Dan. Maybe you don't want to go back to that weather.
Spent 2 years.
I think that's more than enough. I don't think I could last a day.
When he was at Oregon as their quarterbacks coach, he got in trouble because he did an interview and said, "Yeah, I desperately want to get back to coach Nebraska one day."
Okay.
And then he got in trouble because, well, that's kind of a bad move. You're working for a different place. That's not.
Well, who else could you see realistically? Do you see anybody from maybe that Miami coaching staff?
No. Norvell at Memphis.
Yeah.
That's a name. They're probably going to call Justin Fuente from Virginia Tech and see if he's willing to leave Virginia Tech. That's going to be expensive. I don't know if Florida's going to want to spend the money because you've got to buy Fuente out at Virginia Tech even if you want him. And I don't know if Fuente really wants to leave because he's got a great relationship with that athletic director. Like, they basically, you know, when he left Memphis, Virginia Tech called him up and they basically talked it out over a phone and then met each other and had a handshake. You know, they've got a really good relationship. I don't know if he'll leave for Florida. And I think he kind of likes being in Virginia Tech. Yeah. He kind of likes being off the beaten path. The one thing Florida, if they're going to hit a home run, they are the SEC program most likely to get Chip Kelly.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because Florida was never good at football for like 60 years. And then the first coach who was ever good at football there was Spurrier, who never showed up for alumni things, never met with boosters, and always just left at the end of the day to go play golf. Yeah. So Florida are kind of used to having a deadbeat dad for a head coach. They do not have the kind of relationship with their coach that Alabama has, or Tennessee has.
Do you see some of the accusations of Chip Kelly, like maybe not loving our darker skinned friends? Do you think that might hurt him at a place like Florida, where it's a different breed of people, let's say in Florida, than like at UCLA or wherever else?
We'll see.
Do you think that reputation would hurt him? I think it would hurt him recruiting.
We don't know yet, because I mean, we just don't know. We have to see how he does in college. Like, we'll have to see what happens when he goes back to college.
Okay, Dan, is there a wild card? Is there a guy? Is there a guy like maybe in the NFL? Is there a guy at a program that no one else would maybe think, but you, Dan, say this guy could be the Florida guy?
If I had to pick a guy who's completely off the beaten path that nobody's talking about, let's say Bill Clark at UAB.
Ooh.
Bill Clark has impressed a lot of people. Basically their program got the death penalty. Mm-hmm. You know, the school closed his football team down, then decided about a year later to bring him back. He had to build a football team back from scratch because all of his players transferred when the team got shut down. And, I think they've already got 6 wins this season.
Yeah.
It's an amazing coaching job he's pulled off at UAB. He's going to probably get a job somewhere. I could definitely see him. The most likely place for him is replacing Norvell at Memphis, because they're probably going to be looking for a new coach, because Norvell looks like somebody's going to get him. If not Florida, there's going to be like 4 other SEC jobs open. One of them will probably get Norvell. But
I think you would maybe think Tennessee.
If really I was Tennessee, good. That's the guy I would be zeroing in on, because they desperately need to get Memphis back.
I have another pick, wild card. Some people are talking about him. He played quarterback in the SEC. Oddly enough, just got done coaching in Colorado State, or is right now. Mike Bobo. I think Mike Bobo.
That is never going to happen, because the alumni will never stand for hiring another Colorado State coach.
Maybe, but I think if all the chips fall, and Florida kind of gets left holding the goose, if you will, I don't know if that's a phrase, it is now, I think Mike Bobo's going to be back in the SEC next year.
I just think he's just screwed by being in Colorado State. He won't get the Florida job just because of that.
I think he might be a better interviewer than that. I think Mike Bobo will probably end up in Mississippi State or Tennessee, be my guess. But if the dominoes fall, the moon aligns, Dan, weird stuff happens sometimes, especially in Florida. And if I was a Florida fan, I would hate the idea of getting Mike Bobo, actually.
If I'm Florida, I want a spread coach, and I think most of the Florida fans want a spread coach.
Yeah.
Not another pro-style guy. So I think
who's to say Mike Bobo couldn't adapt and run?
Oh, and there's another name. There's another name we left out. Jeff Brohm.
Yes.
And Jeff Brohm has,
yeah, of course.
Jeff Brohm has cooled a little bit because Purdue kind of fell off. But I mean, the fact that he had that hot September with Purdue, who I think they've averaged like 3 wins a year for the last 5 years.
Like rustic.
Yeah.
Programs are just might be the best way to describe Purdue, Dan.
And he would provide offense. Like that,
took a look at the
that is the
odds
number
earlier.
One thing for yeah. Florida is they are going to hire an offensive.
Dan, I was taking a look at the odds earlier. This guy is plus 1,100 if you want to take the bet. Tim Tebow. Is Tim Tebow not the head coach? But does Tim Tebow maybe end up back at Florida at some point?
He's not smart enough to be a coach.
But he can be a strength coach. How hard is it to be a strength coach?
I don't think he goes hard enough to be a strength coach. That's another level.
Man, this is a guy who played defensive tackle in a state championship game. I think people forget that.
I think you're just underestimating what it takes to be a strength coach.
Not if you're just surrounded with good people. Just put your neck, smart rabbit.
I don't trust any strength coach whose neck isn't wider than it is long.
So you wouldn't accept like Randy Orton?
No! Fuck that! Get the fuck out of here, stack of dimes, okay. Neck!
But you don't think they're gonna maybe force in a little Tim Tebow goodwill thing in Florida at some point? Because you just hear the name pop up, you gotta figure he's gonna end up somewhere at some point. Someone's gonna do something
dumb.
He's
gonna be a media gadfly. He's never gonna have a real job where he actually has to work. That guy's lazy and stupid. He's not gonna do a real job.
Working for Jesus, Dan. Pretty harsh words. I think Tim Tebow, not a future guest of the podcast.
Have you heard what Tim Tebow's SAT score was?
2.
It was 790.
Combined?
That was his total SAT score.
Wow.
But he had that bullshit homeschool GPA.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny when your mom's the proctor. What kind of GPA you can roll off.
He's got something better than brains, Dan. That's called a heart.
But he doesn't have a foreskin.
And he can't.
We know that.
Well, as he shouldn't. There's a covenant with Moses, Dan. I don't know if you heard about it. Dan, we spent a lot of time talking about Florida. Let's talk about a few things from last week before we jump to next week real quick. Let's just start with the big game. Ohio State has one of the craziest comebacks, I think, against Penn State. Crazy because JT Barrett turned into Joe I think the soul of Joe Montana entered JT Barrett, where he completed, what was that in the game, 13 straight passes?
I think it was 16, wasn't it?
16, and I think he threw 6 incompletions the whole game.
Yeah.
Great, great game.
Ohio State's looking like the team I thought they'd be in the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, like, if you go back to the Big Ten episode we did with Rob the Nerd, like, Kevin Wilson, I have such a tremendous respect for him. He's their offensive coordinator, longtime offensive coordinator at Oklahoma, Northwestern back in the early days of the spread, Indiana head coach the past few years. He has a reputation for just being able to build an offense. JT Barrett is not a great passer, but Kevin Wilson has built a passing offense around what JT Barrett can do and perfectly complemented it with the run and play design to get the most out of JT Barrett. Instead of asking him to do things he can't do, which is what Ohio State has often done with JT Barrett, they're just having him do what he can do, and it's pretty daggum good.
All right, Dan, I don't mean to rush you here. Let's just go ahead and jump into it. Let's talk the playoff rankings came out today. 1, 2, 3, 4, Georgia number 1, Bama number 2, Notre Dame number 3, Clemson 4. How do you feel about this top? Did they get the top 4 right?
I think they got the top 3 right. I'm not sure Clemson deserves to be number 4. Like, what is Clemson's marquee win?
Well, I think we'll learn a lot about Clemson against – I know NC State lost last week. I think we learned a little bit more.
Yeah, but that's not how it works. Like, the rankings are supposed to be as of today, not projecting what they'll be like in a
week or
two.
Well, I think it's also respect from what they did last
week. That's not how the committee
does
it.
It's not how it's supposed – that's how it works.
It's not, though. Like, they frequently haven't. Like, the first year of the rankings, like, Mississippi State debuted number 1 because they had the best resume. Like, they tear it up at the end of the week, you know, and rejudge it. I don't understand why Clemson would be ranked 4. Like, their best win is what, Auburn?
Auburn. I think that is their best one, yeah.
Ooh.
It's a good win, man. Auburn's one of the best – Auburn's a top 14 team.
I look at Clemson and I would have them 6th. I would probably go Ohio State 4 and then Oklahoma 5.
You would put Oklahoma ahead, even though Oklahoma beat Ohio State?
Yeah, no, because it's not just about that one game. Like, you look at the rest of Oklahoma's games, they haven't looked that
Oklahoma
great.
Oklahoma lost to who, Dan?
Iowa State.
Who just beat who?
TCU, who might not
maybe,
be.
Maybe
the Big 12 just may not be all that good.
Well, maybe we can say Ohio State. I mean, Iowa State's probably a decent team. I think that's.
They're decent, but they're not. I mean, it's funny. Ohio State has a better loss because Oklahoma is a better team than Iowa State. So Oklahoma's being punished for being better than the team they lost to.
Yeah, I don't think that's fair. I think
Ohio State has just thunderfucked everybody they played.
We're a couple of fluky loss versus Iowa away from Iowa State being undefeated, I think.
And the other thing about Oklahoma is just when you apply the eye test and the statistics, their defense is just trash.
Yeah.
Their defense is an embarrassment. Ohio State has definitely looked like a more complete team.
Do you think if TCU won last week, do you think TCU?
Yeah,
would
have been TCU would have been 4.
They would have been undefeated. Yeah. Do you think Washington at 12? Do you think that was kind of unfair to Washington? Or
no, I mean, it's not their fault. Their schedule stinks. It stinks.
Yeah, and I think the random loss to Arizona State just hurt. The way they lost, it's not like they lost on a last second weird play.
And it's not, and Arizona State hasn't looked all that amazing.
No.
Like, it's not like Arizona State's been playing great defense all year. Like, Arizona State just, like, out of nowhere shut Washington down and then went back to being shitty, like, a week or two later.
All right, Dan, is there anything else in the rankings you want to talk about before we jump to picking these games here?
I take that back. Virginia Tech is Clemson's biggest win. Virginia Tech, they're ranked 13. And Clemson did demolish them. So
yeah.
I guess I can kind of see that. I mean,
no, and my other thing with the Clemson, like, it was on a Friday to Sarah. It's just a weird loss, Dan. You lost your quarterback.
Body clocks.
I'm just not sure. Like, Clemson's loss to me is better than Ohio State or Oklahoma's one loss. How about that? And I know Syracuse is actually not as good as either of the teams they lost to, but it's because of the weird conditions. Just make it anything on a Friday. Good teams shouldn't play on Fridays.
A Friday in upstate New York in the cold.
Yeah. Well, in the dome.
I
guess it's cold outside. And it wasn't even cold that day.
And look at UCF down there at 18th, 7-0. You know, look at a non-power five team. We got two non-power five teams in the top 25. We got Central Florida at 18th and Memphis at 23rd. So the American Conference having a pretty good year so far.
Yeah. All right, then. And Memphis at 23. I mean, it doesn't count. But it's still at 23. It's not bad.
I mean, that's a tremendous thing for the American Conference to have two teams in the top 25.
Three.
Where's the third?
Memphis. We said Memphis already. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I said Memphis, Central Florida. Yeah.
And Navy, who's not in. Navy always should be number one, Dan, because I respect the troops.
Yeah, but not the. I don't respect the ones you have to walk. I only respect sailors.
Yes.
Because
not the ones that fly either. Fuck that.
Yeah, fuck them. Well, I respect the ones who fly off of aircraft carriers.
Yeah. I respect Navy SEALs. Aren't the Marines part of the Navy?
Jesse the Body Ventura. I always respect him.
Aren't the Marines also a division of the Navy? So the count?
I think technically.
There's no Marine College, so Navy should just take that one. And what's the Army got? Green Beret. What's the Air Force got? NASA. Oh, that's cute. Fake a moon landing. let's jump to the games this Saturday, Dan. And I'll jump into it. 12 o'clock. I don't know if I would have picked the start time for this one. Auburn travels to Texas A&M. Auburn's favored 15.5. Who you got?
Give me the points, but I don't feel good about it. This is a game I stay away from.
I stay away from it because Auburn, you know, just lost Pettaway again. Probably won't be back to the bowl season. But they also get everyone back healthy. So you lose your best running back from last year, but everyone else is healthy. A&M Auburn's always been a weird series. I think last year A&M blew out Auburn. It seems to go back and forth. It seems to be one of those weird series where the away team wins every time, kind of the opposite of Auburn LSU. Give me Auburn. I think Auburn blows out A&M. I think A&M's about ready to quit.
This is also a trademark Stephen Godfrey anxiety bowl. Like, whoever loses this game's in some trouble.
Yeah.
Coaching-wise.
And then we have to start talking about Malzahn a lot. But Malzahn's got another year, I think.
If Malzahn loses this game, he might be in trouble.
If Malzahn loses this, Auburn
people have quick triggers.
That's true, but if he loses this, he loses Georgia, and he gets blown up Alabama, Malzahn will be gone. He can't go 0-4-3 in November. All right, let's jump now. Penn State travels to Michigan State. Penn State coming off the loss. Penn State's favored by 8.5. Does Michigan State, they lost to Northwestern, I believe, last week. Which team bounces back big?
Penn State is going to annihilate Michigan State.
I think Penn State's going to be pissed. This is not the best scenario for Michigan.
Also, Penn State is the perfect team to destroy Michigan State. Because when you look at Michigan State, their defense is terrible against the deep ball. Well, that's all Penn State does. You know, Michigan State cannot defend deep passes down the middle of the field. They had success against Michigan because Michigan can't throw. Well, that's not an issue against Penn State.
All right, Dan, let's jump to this one. 12 o'clock, SEC Network. UMass travels to Mississippi State. Mississippi State favored by 28. Mississippi State ranks 16 now. Only has two losses. They got killed in both those, but the only other two good teams they've really played in the SEC. Do you think they're good enough to beat a horrible team like UMass by 28?
They better. Dan Mullen ain't getting that Florida job.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see what happens there when the Dan Mullen rumors kind of start flying around Mississippi State. That's the team I want to watch too, Dan. Mississippi State's not going to really do anything, but they're probably the fourth or fifth best team in the SEC. Let's jump now. South Carolina travels to Georgia. 3:30 on CBS. Georgia's favored by 24. Give me South Carolina in the points. I don't think Georgia's going to keep blowing people out. They ain't played nobody as good as South Carolina since Notre Dame. I think South Carolina's a really underrated team and might be undefeated if they had a field goal kicker, Dan. who's worth the day.
I just think that's too many points to be going up against a Will Muschamp defense with.
Yeah, it feels like we pick against Georgia every week and they just win like 58-2.
Yeah, but like South Carolina is just their defense is going to be feisty.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's like you said, it's been too long since they had to play a team with a pulse. That doesn't mean they're going to lose, but they're just due to have a ugly, messy game.
This November is when we're going to – I do this every week, but I feel like this November is when we learn the most about Georgia, because you're going to play – this is when you're going to play all your best teams, and two of those are South Carolina and Kentucky, but you still got to play it. Let's jump now to a game that felt a lot bigger last week. Clemson travels to NC State. Clemson's favored by 8. Give me Clemson. I think Clemson blows out NC State. I think they're demoralized after losing to Notre Dame.
I don't know. I'm inclined to take the points there just because NC State's run defense did get blown out by Notre Dame, but Notre Dame is maybe the best running team in the country that's not a service academy, you know, running the flex mode. Not being able to stop Notre Dame is not. I mean, okay, you can stop normal running teams, not Notre Dame. Clemson's not a good running team. I could very easily see NC State shutting them down and forcing them to be one-dimensional and throw the ball. And they'll still win, but I could see this being a dogfight. Give me the points.
Okay, let's jump now.
And it's in Raleigh. And it's in Raleigh.
Yeah. Okay, but this is also one of those weird situations today where think NC State will do well, they never do. Now, if NC State had, like, 6 losses, they'll probably beat Clemson for some reason. Let's jump now. Stanford, Washington State, a really important game now in the Pac-12. You could argue. Washington State's favored by 2. Give me Washington State here. I've hated Stanford all year. They're not a good team. I'm sorry.
Stanford needs to figure out who their better quarterback is. They've been fiddling around playing the wrong quarterback. Stick with the guy who can play. I don't like this Washington State team. I feel like something's turned at this team. Mm-hmm. There's just something very toxic. It feels like it's crept into that locker room. Give me Stanford. I just don't have a good feeling about Washington State.
They probably ordered some Asian there, Dad. Let's jump down to the Civil War. Is that what we call it? Or Bedlam? Excuse me. Oklahoma State, both 7-1. This could maybe be for the Big 12 when we look back at it. Oklahoma State's favorite by 2.5. Who do you like here?
Give me Oklahoma.
Yeah, I don't know Oklahoma State's favorite.
I just don't trust Oklahoma State against a good team.
Yeah. All right, let's jump now, Dan, to the second game on CBS. This is a rare CBS doubleheader this week, Dan. LSU, Alabama. Alabama's favorite by 21.5. Can the resurgent LSU keep it close versus Alabama?
That's too many points to give LSU. Give me those points. LSU's Alabama. Not bums. Like, they're not bums.
I just think Alabama's – you know what? At the beginning of the year, this is the game I picked Alabama to lose. I don't think so anymore. Alabama's
going to they're not going to lose, but that's too many points.
I think Alabama will beat them by 35 or more.
I can't. Yeah, I can't do that. LSU is a good team. They're not great. They're not good enough to beat Alabama, certainly.
Well, that's too many points. The issue with good teams versus Alabama, Saban's not a guy who takes teams lightly. That's the thing. They're going to come out and play hard. They're going to be pissed about not being number one. They're going to prove why they should be number one this week against LSU. Virginia Tech, Miami, kind of the big game on ABC this week at 8 o'clock. La Tech's favored by 2.5. Give me Miami. They're going to win on like a weird – like Virginia Tech's going to fumble the snap on a kneel, and Miami wins. Because Satan is on Mark Richt's side, Dan.
Give me Virginia Tech. I think they win by 2 scores. I think this is the week Miami gets exposed.
Miami can't get exposed, Dan, because they got Satan on their side, baby. All right, in our final game, Arizona, USC at 10:45 Eastern on ESPN. USC is favored by 7. Give me Arizona. Anytime USC is favored, I don't trust them.
Give me Arizona because they're going to have 50 points by halftime.
Yeah. So
Khalil Tate is averaging like. Arizona is only averaging about 50-some plays a game, and this is a Rich Rod no-huddle spread. But the reason why they're only averaging like 50-some plays is because they're scoring a touchdown like every 3 plays. They scored 58 points in their last game, or 50. It was over 50 points. They only had 13 first downs because like every other play was a touchdown. That's insanity.
All right, Dan, and I want to ask you one last question. How will the cold weather in the Southeast affect the games this week when it's a freezing 60 degrees in Alabama?
See, that's the other reason why I think we're going to have some low scoring games, these big spreads like Georgia, South Carolina, and Alabama, LSU. I don't see them being able to cover it. I don't think the skill position players are going to have great games.
No, we saw it, Dan. You probably didn't see, but in the NFL this week, the weather was horrible on the East Coast, and a lot of games were closer than they should have been.
Yeah.
Not the best week. Dan, before we get out of here, you got anything else?
I hope everybody had a spooky Halloween. By the time you're hearing this, it'll be a few days later. I hope you all had lots of fun and had sex with somebody of a different gender than you normally do. Because that's the Halloween spirit.
Our no gender. We're not here to assume gender on this podcast.
Yeah, the binary.
Maybe you are, because you're kind of a right-wing guy. I'm a little more free. You're kind of like a Pat Roberts guy. I'm just, you know.
Yeah, I'm all about Pat Robertson. I'm in the 700 Club.
Bestiality. I want to give I'm going to give a shout-out this week. No, fuck you. Shout-out to the Monster Mash. The best love song in the world, Dan. My favorite Valentine's Day song. And it's a pretty good Halloween song, too. And I want to give a shout-out to this. If you're listening to this, it's going to be November 2nd and 3rd. Welcome to the start of the Christmas season, baby. Happy holidays, bitch.
I'm already exhausted.
Christmas, Dan. Time for Christmas music.
Fuck you of the week to my boss, who plays the same oldie station every day, because I know in like 3 days it's going to be Christmas music. And I cannot handle it.
Dan, we're going to close every show with a Christmas song, I think. White Christmas, another racist Christmas song, a lot of stuff.
Jingle Bell Rock.
Feliz Navidad. Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer.
That does all the Burl Ives hits.
It's Christmas at Hollis, Queens. One of my favorite personal Christmas songs. We sing it at my church every year. It's a lot of fun. Christmas time.
The dreidel song.
Dreidel song. What's another great Christmas? You got you know what? If you got Spotify, Google Play, whatever, go find the Michael Bublé Christmas album. It's one of the best. His version of All I Want for Christmas Is You, Dan, is the best. Better than Mariah Carey. There we go.
Oh, fuck off. That's the most racist thing you've ever said on this show. And I
Michael Bublé.
I'll never trust you ever again after this.
This will be the whole show next week is arguing about this, so thank you. Happy holidays, everybody!
Oh, God, Jason, play the music.
Jingle bells.